A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Mapsack.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Cues episode, and we don't just have News and Cues, we also have Mando BTS, which doesn't quite rhyme, but it's still fun to say.
It's not as catchy, but it definitely is interesting. We're going to discuss that. We are going to look at the High Republic event that happened just the morning of this recording. Almost breaking news, but not a lot to get to, plus your questions, as Joseph said. Before we do that, we'll remind you today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. How do you listen to your music, and how do you listen to your books? A little bit later, we'll have our Four Center Recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us, but that is not all, Joseph.
No, it's not. We're also selling knives. Nope, Nope, that's a lie. we have fun with the broadcasting rhythms, but we have a sincere offer that we actually do really like or really excited about. Inside Editions, they are a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books. Secrets of the Jedi, one of my personal favorites, the Lightsaber Collection that Ken and I did a big review on. That one is great. There's a Galaxy's Edge cookbook, all sorts of great Star Wars books from Inside Editions. They are offering 35% off across their website with a special Force Center code. This excludes collectibles, limited edition products, and already discounted products, but there are, of course, a bunch of great Star Wars books that you can get. This offer lasts until Friday, January 8th at midnight Pacific time, so soon, soon. To get your discount, enter the coupon code FC35 or visit the website with this specific link. You can go to insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. Again, that's insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. Just a quick visit and then some good Star Wars book fun in your life.
Absolutely. You need that. You know, the holidays are over, so now you need to start buying yourself gifts again. Force Center. We love presenting you all with those opportunities, as things we believe in, things we read ourselves, and you're all part of the Force Center family. And Force Center family, this is interesting. I just realized that Joseph, this will be, it's our 282nd main show. We're approaching 1,000 overall broadcasts, but also this will be, well, technically the start of our 7th season.
Oh,
of Force Center.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Yeah, we, you know, 2015 you launched, so the way seasons are listed, and it can get a little weird, too, when you start listing seasons and episodes on Apple Podcasts. Some of you are aware, like, they dropped. I try to have to kind of rearrange them, but this will be what I will list as our 7th season of Force Center. I'm so sorry you've been stuck with me this long.
I'm happy to be stuck with you. I don't like the forward movement of time. That's a little bit of BS, but I'm happy to be talking about Star Wars with you.
Yeah, so Joseph, Jennifer, and I are very happy that you're all here. And also, you know, it was great to have Jennifer's voice on the show last week with her checking in with her thoughts on the Disney Investor Day and Mandalorian. And so many of you were so excited just to hear her again. And we were as well. And Jennifer, in the 7th season, will be in and out when she can. And we're looking forward to that as well. We always like to catch up with ourselves because we are, you know, this is one of the longest working and personal relationships I've ever had. Joseph and I love to catch up and, you know, Star Wars adventures, life adventures, another busy week, we both had New Year's shows, a lot going on. How are you, sir? And what went down?
Yeah. And I'm doing good. I am feeling actually refreshed. You know, there's always that weird New Year thing of, you know, it is on one hand just a meaningless changing of days. It's just you put up a new calendar, but things have meaning when we as individuals and as cultures agree to give them meaning. And I love New Year's because I think that New Year's fits my worldview, because New Year's is always this time, particularly lately, when it's been when the world has been really difficult for lots of people, where as a culture, we come together and very honestly go, that sucked. Here's a list of bad things. So we're being really, really honest about bad things, but then facing it with a sense of like humor and celebration and renewal. And I think that's really why, like when I was younger, I was like, I like New Year's Eve because that's the holiday where everybody wants to go to a show and have a drink. And I still like it for that reason. But I think that kind of deeper philosophy of what New Year's actually is to us culturally means a lot to me. And this year, I think I really needed that, let's really face the horrors and be honest about them, but then also say, let's have fun. Let's join with friends over the internet or safely, and then kind of put our best foot forward. So I had a great time doing the online New Year's Eve show, done New Year's shows for years and years and years. And my friend Laser, who I do the game night show with, they kindly reached out to me and was like, you should really do a New Year's show. You've been doing them forever. We'll do one together. And I did. And it was great. And we did a lot of the kind of normal traditions of things we do at our normal show. And somebody in the YouTube comments who was watching the show was like, they're just doing the whole show, but online. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. We're not just kind of hanging out online. We're doing the whole damn show. So that was a ton of fun. And then had some nice just kind of getting back into the groove with Sarah days after that. only real Star Wars adventure being, well, a couple Star Wars adventures, but my favorite was, so I get chilly very easily, and then I complain about it. And Sarah was like, you know, you have that nice red and black flannel shirt that you bought from the 2019 Star Wars Celebration store, the George Lucas Darth Maul flannel. Why don't you wear that? And I haven't worn flannel in a long time, but I wore that George Lucas Darth Maul flannel shirt all weekend, and it was great.
Man, I hope you took some great photos just randomly walking them in the background of documentaries. It's an old clip. It's one of those things that have popped up. If you just discovered it, that's great. It's hilarious, but that's been around for a few years, and I'm so glad that got some life. But anyways,
it's so funny because it looks like he's walking right at the camera that he, like, he has something to say to it. And then he's like, no, nope, I'm going to turn away.
Sounds like you had a good relaxing time. And I, you know, not to turn this into New Year's Center. I'm with you. I always love New Year's. I'm one of those folks that looks back a lot. You know, that's probably why I'm depressed more than anxious. Depression, you kind of, you know, you're locked a little bit in your past, to not to get too deep in something I battled with. But I think that factors into how I look at New Year's. I'm always like, wow, how will 1989 be remembered? And this was before, documentaries every week would come out on Netflix of the 80s and everything. But this was the first year I literally... And I can go down that path of, look, it's not the year, it's you. Take it forward, and blah, blah, blah. It's not the calendar, it's not the sloth calendar. I'm so glad that's continuing in your house there. At one point on Friday, I actually just kind of went, oh wow, we made it, and I just didn't even expect that reaction in me towards this year and that number.
Yeah. Do you spend a lot of time reflecting on your actual year? Like, I know a lot of people on social media make their list of what they did do and didn't do. Mm-hmm. I always end up running out of time because I'm always running behind on the New Year's Eve show. So I don't have time to post. Here's what I did. Here's what I didn't do. But do you go through that personal catalog for yourself?
Yes, this year was obviously way different for many obvious reasons, and it also just was a whir and a blur because it all looked the same from the same room, right? 2020, I'll remember my living room. It's just part of my brain, I guess. It's why I love documentaries that look back at little moments. It's why I think I love baseball cards to look on the back and just love a collection of baseball stats that show here's what you did in these years and those kind of things. And so I'll be like, how will I remember 2018? It was the year I did this, or this happened, and it kind of becomes like my own living history document. And I can get a little lost in that, this year again, a little different, but definitely look back and what all of us got through, accomplished. There were some accomplishments, but a lot of got through.
And I think that is an accomplishment to get through things sometimes. So any Star Wars adventures to your general New Year's life adventures?
Not in terms of watching much. We did some New Year's follow up from Christmas, Lord of the Rings stuff. Grace and I finished our Game of Thrones complete rewatch. Ooh. We finished season 8 this weekend. I love the season. Other people don't. We'll just leave it on that. And I had a little good time enjoying the big dinner of Thai food and watching the final two episodes last night. But I'll tell you, I hesitated to mention this. I won't be too long. I want to start by saying this is not, I'm proud of a lot of things I've written. And like most writers, I'm also not proud of most of the things I've written. So this is not I did a good thing. I was cleaning out my Google Drive. You know, that's what you do on the New Year's Day. Let me clean up my Google Drive. And I found a document from 2010. I mentioned it in other places, perhaps on the show before, a document called Rise of the Rebellion, which was the beginning of my treatment for Star Wars spec script. I did this in 2010. And my friends who I mentioned at the time were like, that's stupid. They're never going to make another Star Wars movie. And I go, well, that's not the point. The point is, let me just see if I can write this, and maybe that will get the attention you need elsewhere. Sometimes it's a way to approach specs, blah, blah, blah. Joseph and I will talk about Writing Center some other time. And number one, I'll say this. It's horrible. but it starts, I could show everyone, it's time-stamped. It starts with a Vader hallway scene, hacking rebels. So I've always been proud that at least I was connected to that. And then it intertwines an Obi-Wan in the desert story. So again, not surprising. Of course, that's what you're going to do. But I was just having, I had a lot of fun reading it. Because again, that was 10 years ago I sat down to write that. And to look where we are now, be like, well, back then, there was in my mind, there was no thought that I would see Obi-Wan in the desert officially in a Star Wars capacity, or more stories of the formation of the rebellion, all those kind of things. And again, script and the treatment, horrible. I didn't get the script phase. Horrible. I'm not saying I'm good at all. The story would not be a good Star Wars story. But I just was like, what a weird, fun way to just reflect on where we are now as Star Wars fans, and a reminder of what a great time to be a Star Wars fan and how that still is going. So it was an interesting journey.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. And I think it's great to find those moments that allow you to step back and just be grateful for just more Star Wars.
Yeah.
Period.
And hopefully that my writing skills have improved. No, there was, you know, Gus, it's early phases. But yeah, it was interesting. So anyways, that was my Star Wars adventure.
That's a great one. You found a Star Wars adventure past to share, which is a perfect thing for our New Year's episode of Force Center.
Oh, it's embarrassing. Anyways, you know what's not embarrassing? The Star Wars they're making now in The Mandalorian Season 2. Wow, there's a lot of people with opinions on that. And thank you to a lot of people who listened to the discussion last week, the deep dive of Luke and The Mandalorian. I got out of rhythm and I finally remembered to put it, upload the audio version on YouTube, and that quickly garnered some listens as well. So we appreciate you all following us down our deep dives and sometimes just our open forum philosophical discussions of Jedi in the moment. And that speaks again to the success of the show, and without a doubt, the show's successful. So the Disney Gallery, you'd imagine that would be successful as well and something fun to watch. And it was. We're going to take a quick look, Joseph, overall reaction to just this one special.
Yeah, it was great to see just this one compact thing. I really enjoyed the first season where you and I did long episodes about each episode because it was the long sit down discussions. But this was this is a little bit more kind of Star Wars like. It had its foot on the gas, but there were some like big ideas that popped out to me. And I think I really enjoyed the amount of different people who talked about this emphasis on the new and the old. That was something that Pedro Pascal said of like, I really want to keep a focus on the story and new characters and new ideas while still having a lot of respect for what has come before and all the parts of Star Wars that people are nostalgic for. And I think there's all these little beats between Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. And again, you know, I know it's a curated documentary, so they're showing us what they want to see. But there's almost this playful dance of the new and the old between them, where they showed so many little scenes where John's like, what if we do this? What if we do this? And he's almost poking Dave. And then Dave going, no, you can't do that. I know it's not as simple or as limited as that, but it was just because obviously they're both exploring new and old things all the time in their work on the show. But it was another way where that dance of like, this is what is one of the many things that's exciting about Star Wars is finding that balance between, you know, the new and the old. And somebody else described it as, you know, taking a lot of the ingredients and just remixing them into an entirely new dish. So I like that theme. I really just like the general a presentation of fun and play that I'm sure there are some cranky moments. I'm sure there's some difficult moments, but they showed so many moments of people from all the different departments, different people who got brought in, like the graffiti artist, just so many scenes of people having fun and playing and being in a place of joy. It looked like a very joyful set to be on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's important to me. And it's just, you know, again, there's horrible set stories all around the world, and it's going to be the case, but just see that the love that everyone brought to this again, and those who joined, the love they brought to it, and from all levels up and down, and it's part of the reason I think we love some of these docs, seeing some of the people that don't get the light shined on them, who do amazing things, and the designs that make the universe just robust and vibrant and alive, and that's always the fun of this. What, you know, yes, last year, 8 episodes, we did the breakdown of it. We had a lot of fun doing it. There was a lot of depth to be found in those discussions. This year, they probably couldn't do it as much. Sure, some COVID restrictions, them all in a room around a table, budget, or just also, hey, we don't want to put the energy and time into 8 episodes. Here's a special. I can get behind all of that. What did you think about that structure and the choice? They went through kind of the chronological experience of the directors per, you know, episode, and just kind of, you know, for me, I'll say that made it kind of simple to follow if you're just kind of like, oh, let me sit down and watch this. But what did you think about that structure?
Yeah, I really liked it, especially for this one shot, right? Last season when it was they broke it up into different ideas. That was really fun. Of here's the tech, here's the child, here are the directors, all those different things. We got to see in this structure little moments with fight choreographers and costume designers and set design. And we got to see all those, all those great people and all those great trades. But I think this was good, particularly for people who are just like, hey, I watched The Mandalorian and it's Sunday and I'm going to put on something. People who aren't obsessively watching for who was the director every episode to kind of give them a little sense of the different creative voices. But I think the big thing I liked about it is it did give this great overall picture of the process. Very early on, Brendan Wayan had that great observation about Favreau of, It's the actor's jobs to be to nail their moment, and the director should absolutely nail a moment, but the director also has to kind of have this big picture vision at all times of how do all these moments add up. And in a way, that's what this structure showed me of. I like starting with Favreau in that interview of him saying it was fun for me to direct, but I kind of just like being able to hang in the background and help people if they need it and if they want it and kind of keep the whole thing on the rail. But other than that, hey, all you directors, go crazy. Bring your personality, bring your perspective, bring your sense of play and your emphasis in Star Wars and the kind of genre influences of this episode. So I think being able to just walk through it with Favreau clearly being like I'm the guy who's watching over everything ultimately, but then we get to see each director have this different flavor and this different experience. It was really insightful to me for the overall project.
Yeah, the tone was really set in season one of each individual director bringing so much flavor to their episodes. And we loved that. In the gallery, that was some of our favorite stuff looking back at last year's discussion. So I think it just made sense to kind of anchor it around what you're just describing. Favreau at the top and the flow chart on down and the directors in their individual moments. And that's some of my favorite moments that we're going to discuss here are from the directors where you get to see their light shine. And that's why I think I really did like the structure. You mentioned insightful moments. Did you have some favorites?
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of them are, I'll just be honest. Sometimes it's just fun for me when I hear one of the directors share an observation about Star Wars that I strongly agree with. So it's insightful in that I'm so glad that they see that part of Star Wars that way, because so do I. I really liked Peyton Reed talking about how much in the script of the second chapter of this season, chapter 10, Passenger, that it was about pulp, right? That it was a frog lady and a masked man and a little green creature, and they crash on an ice planet, and then they get chased by ice spiders until the frog lady has to go full frog, and just that emphasis on pulp, because that is, I think, sometimes that influence, the importance of that influence on the adventure serial and pulp doesn't get discussed as much or can be kind of lost. And I think it's a really important part of the DNA of Star Wars. We're going to talk about it more on next this week's deep dive. So that was really fun for me to hear. So that was one of the insightful moments. I got a few more, but I want to hear yours too.
What's funny, I one of my favorite moments was Peyton Reed saying, this episode is a man in a mask, a frog lady, a puppet, and a puppet. And I'm obviously fully aware of that. I watched that episode and consider it one of my favorites of the series. But just to hear it highlighted, it's like, wow, yeah. And they got so much from that. It's good to pause and focus on that. And I'm glad you put that one there. I enjoyed every second. I talked about it a little bit, I think last week too, but every second of Robert Rodriguez. And it gave me confidence about his involvement in the series going forward. And when you hear somebody, obviously we've talked about it here, I've grown up, I like Boba Fett's costume, not a huge Boba Fett fan. I could wear that on a t-shirt. I've said it so much. To see someone else's passion for that character and for him to step in and bring it to that episode. And it just made me appreciate what they did more. And made me want to go back and analyze it more and see if I love the episode in a different way, if I can pull more things out of it. It wasn't initially one of my favorite episodes, but I just was kind of like, all right, he came to play on that, but also brought a lifetime of joy and personal understanding for that character, what the character could be, and that, and plus play guitar with Grogu. I mean, come on. So I really liked that. It was something to, I enjoyed seeing highlighted.
Yeah, that might be my favorite part of this documentary. A lot of great moments, a lot of great people got to shine, but seeing Robert Rodriguez have that level of passion for Boba Fett, and I think being able to really articulate that connection that people of that generation have with Boba Fett, of it's partially that he looked really cool, but you know, everything he said, he's the opposite of Han Solo. He's Han Solo's rival. How cool is that? He was a mystery before the movie. We saw him in a cartoon. We ordered his action figure. We had to send away for his action figure before the movie. We knew he was coming. And then even though he mostly just stood around, he was still the coolest thing ever. And what was cool about it in that era was the imagination of what he could be. So to hear Rodriguez not only articulate that, but have such genuine personal passion for it, to make that pre-visualization with his kids in his action figures. And I loved what he said about, I didn't care whether there was going to be more Boba Fett storytelling or not. This one scene had to deliver on these decades of wondering what does Boba Fett truly look like when he is utterly unchained. And the fact that he specifically said, yeah, I'll do this episode, and I need to make sure Boba Fett does not just look like just another Mandalorian or just another good fighter. He has to be special. He has to be beyond. That was not only thrilling for me as a fan of Boba Fett and from somebody of a similar generation, but also to me, it was just like a big pin in the balloon of criticism, of cynical criticism of Star Wars, of like, Boba Fett sells t-shirts, so they brought back Boba Fett. Like, how can you look at what Robert Rodriguez said and think that it isn't anything but the passion of the creator?
Mm-hmm. It's like when I don't shut up about 7-Eleven and you drive by one, you think, what am I missing in there? You want to go turn in. No, I think you're right. And how it just, and even again, I that episode initially didn't hit me as well as other, it did for others, but now go, you know, I want to go back and really see what he put in there. And, you know, and just his excitement for it just got me more excited, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's awesome. And to see that even with his sort of passion for this is the way it should be, I've already visualized it to make sure it's special. Then to see, you know, Temuera Morrison being incredibly charming, but also see that great flexibility, that great mix of confidence from somebody like Rodriguez of, I know what I want. But now here's this actor bringing in other ideas. So I'm like, yeah, let's play with that too. That great mix of being confident, but still open to discovery.
Yeah. And in the same vein, one of my favorite moments was a little moment with Filoni talking about Ahsoka. And they obviously spent an ample amount of time on that episode, as they should. But just to say, it's reassuring. And I never doubted that he, you know, that this was not, you know, wasn't in his mind, but the idea of just like, I don't want to just bring back a character. I want it to have great purpose. I'm paraphrasing, but, and I think the Ahsoka episode, it's very clear that that was the case, but I love that insight to him going like, all right, you know, we need to learn Grogu's name. We need to have someone who would know that, would be connected. And Ahsoka works in that regard. And it's similar to you and I talking about Luke last week and like, hey, say what you will. That's still the right choice for the time period and what's going on in the galaxy. And that makes sense. I don't feel he was shoehorned in that way. And I didn't feel that with Ahsoka, but I feel even more, you know, more comfortable with their decision and Dave's decision to do it. I like that little moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a lot that did highlight how much they're not just going to bring a character in because they want to, or it would make a good t-shirt. It has to fit the narrative and it has to fit Din's journey. And I think they illustrated that well. One other moment from me, Hal Hickel, we were both extremely charmed by in that first season. I really like this specific point he made when he was also discussing Chapter 10 and kind of some of the ice spider choices and frog lady choices, where he was talking about that he thinks it's important in Star Wars that there are moments of humor or just strange quirkiness during action scenes. And that's one of the things that keeps Star Wars different, that in general, action scenes aren't just grim, what a badass, but they always have that moment of humor or quirkiness to leaven them. I thought that was a great insight and something that I agree with pretty passionately that Star Wars is a little bit odd. It is a little bit weird, and you should be reminded of that even when the most badass thing is happening.
Yep. Full thumbs up for me on that, and I like it just being highlighted, and also it's just a casual reminder for a lot of what goes on in Star Wars there. Any other insights, or do you have some fun and weird moments too that you want to talk about? Because there were a lot in the series.
Oh yeah, no, let's talk fun and weird moments. I liked seeing the first AD Kim Richards again. She also was a highlight for me in season one, and I love just seeing her in action, doing her job. You know, basically giving direction to the extras of what they're reacting to. Yeah. But the way she phrases, like, I don't know if you know Star Wars, but some green pig guys are going to be in here fighting to the death.
Yes. I love that you highlighted that, because it's one of those things where you just can't comprehend that anyone on that set wouldn't know, but then someone might not. And so you're hearing, what? They're pigs and they're fighting? All right. And they're green.
It really does make you step back too, from, like, you know, right after season one, when season two was announced, like all things Mandalorian, on Jon Favreau's Instagram, right? And he posted the little maquette, the little statue, the Gamorrean guard, and you can go to, like, oh, right, canon, and the history of the Gamorreans, and Return of the Jedi, and he gets Star Wars, blah, blah, blah. And again, this is something that's just like, hey, remember, they're green pig guys. That's part of what Star Wars is. That's part of what's fun about it, is we can take it deadly serious, as you and I often do, but also at the same time, they're never not going to be green pig guys. That's what they are.
Yeah. And I love the, you know, we knew that, hey, these ones are fighting ones. The one in Bibb's castle, they must be fighting ones as well. And our pal Tony Thaxton, who does our theme music, had a great tweet I saw about something, I paraphrased, but he just said, like, we're not going to talk about how weird those Gamorrean guards look like in Bibb Fortuna's palace there. they've done some push-ups. The ones at Jabba's palace back in the day, you know, kind of like the coppers 15 years on the job who don't hit the gym anymore. That's the Gamorrean gardens there. I like that. Great moment.
Yeah. So that was one for me. Another fun moment for me was that throwback to season one of Filoni and Favreau discussing the fan speculation on season one Boba Fett. And how loud the boots should be, and what fans are going to think. And, you know, there's a lot of little moments in this that remind you that Filoni is a fan and does feel like he has his finger on the pulse. Honestly, the kind of discussions that, you know, we have in this, you know, Star Wars discussion community about, oh, they're going to think it's Boba Fett, but then they're going to guess not because blah, 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 blah. That was really fun.
Yeah, one of those moments where we all feel seen.
Yeah, just an awareness of speculation is a part of what makes this all go around.
Yeah. One of my favorite moments to piggyback off that was the McClunky moment that everyone's talking about, and you referenced it a bit up top indirectly, but just to watch it again, because this is the only second time saw the scene, but just like, Favreau, number one, funny guy, talented guy. I'm a fan of him. It always sometimes seems like I'm teasing him, but I've got friends like that who aren't really funny, who are just like, what if we did this? And you're like, yeah, no. That wouldn't be. And for Filoni to be like, well, Greedo says it. But wouldn't it be great if Mando says, boom, McClunky? Like, there was just something more playing that. Their relationship is fascinating, and that moment was as great as advertised.
Yes. Yeah. To possibly overanalyze it, it almost seems like sometimes Favreau is maybe actually is in favor of the idea that he is pushing, or is maybe just like pushing Filoni to actually see what the real response will be. What's the real answer of why that doesn't work in Filoni's mind? Why is it okay for Greedo to say McClunky and we all love it and it's funny, but it would be horrific if Mando said it? Why is that? You know? And it almost seems like there's definitely like this fun sibling banter side of it. But it also seems like there is this, like, is this the best way is this how Favreau understands?
I think so. Yeah. And you know, you and I did a deep dive into their Empire Strikes Back deep cut reference moment last season. And you said it up top. This is a documentary that was made. They chose what they put into it. It wasn't us just watching on a live stream camera. So who knows the moments they don't put in there, obviously. And I'm not suggesting there was bad blood or anything. It just was an insight. It's really an insight into how they work. And I think you're right. I think it's a fun poking the bear both ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Some mutual bear poking. And yeah. And I think I enjoy it because I think I can see the final results on screen that they do. There is definitely an effort to find the new and remix the ingredients and try things and test the boundaries of Star Wars. But there's also clearly a deep respect for kind of core ideas of Star Wars. So it's fun. Since I really, really like the final product and think it balances new and old really well, it's fun to see the you know, back in the kitchen. How did they make that sausage?
I do love sausage. Any other moments that you thought were standouts?
Oh, just the only other little moment that amused me is that when they showed Lucas chatting with Ahsoka with Rosario Dawson, that was fun. But also, there's that blurry photo of Lucas with the child and seeing Favreau actually snap it. And then that it says George Lucas, creator of Star Wars.
Always a little weird. Yeah, that was good. I really enjoy Bryce Dallas Howard. I just, she was a star last year's Inside Look. And this one, I guess won me over even more, but I was already won over. I truly believe that one day we might look back and be like, she was an actor before she was a director. Oh, wow. Got it. She just is so in tune. You can clearly see actors, director, all those things we've talked about before, but just the joy she brings, that kind of warmth she seems to exude on set, but also knows what she wants and knows the story she's going to tell. And that little moment, and it was one of Grace's favorite moments in us watching it, where she's just like, "Lady's paying my world," and the extra give the cat the little credits to the woman he was sitting at the table with. I love that moment because Grace loved it, but Bryce Dallas Howard just like, "Nope, this is." I am Star Wars with purpose, from the small to the big, and I love that.
Yeah, it's really great to see her being such kind of a great leader on set and being firm. And then it was really fun that she had some nice sweaters while she was talking to all the Mon Calamari with the nice sweaters too.
Yes. And the last one for me, there's a lot to discuss. We're not doing a full breakdown, but you mentioned Temuera Morrison. Just him, everything about him and the joy and the seriousness of him coming back to play Jango's son. He talks the way he talked about it and just seeing him on set and the song and what he brought in with the dance and the cultural aspect to it and requesting, you know, a gaffy stick that's longer so he can use it to fit in with the cultural influence he wanted to bring to that moment. Everything about it, him, it's great. And I love, you know, he's 59, six, probably about 60, turning 60 this year. You know, the dude looks great, great shape. And all the thing about old man Fett and him quote unquote being out of shape. First of all, you know, hope you're all comfortable with what you are. This isn't a discussions into bodies here, but I'm not joking. I really do feel seen. I was lifting weights this weekend, also waiting to have my Thai food going. Yeah. I'm Boba Fett right now. And I love it. And I just am excited he's here, excited to see what he does with book Boba Fett. But even if this was just it, he came back with purpose as well. And it showed, and I loved him, and I'm all there for old man Fett, and I love it.
Yeah, it's so great on so many levels. And that just great, delightful Star Wars weirdness that he's that the character of Boba Fett has been through a lot, because old man Fett is like in his 30s, right?
Yeah, right. And, you know, Bo-Katan's, you know, probably approaching 70. But, yeah.
But you know, different people age differently in that time. I mean, really good for Star Wars.
I mean, Temuera Morrison being 59 and Ming-Na Wen being 57 is, you talk about stats on the back of baseball cards. Those are two of my favorite stats right now.
Yeah.
Any other fun moments for you? I don't want to leave any on the table for you.
No, those, you know, yes, but we could be here all day. Those are the ones I really wanted to highlight.
Yeah. And you talked about it. We got one episode, not a full breakdown. And it leads to a second question about a big thing missing from this episode. So how do you feel about, as we wrap up discussion here, Joseph, about again, one episode, and will we get more about, you know, that Jedi guy showing up at the end?
Yeah, yeah. As much as I enjoyed that first season of Disney Gallery, I kind of did enjoy this just being a special, because I feel like I got to see a little bit of each director. I got to see, like I said, art department thoughts and, you know, stunt fighter thoughts and all sorts of things. Little bits of information about why they made certain choices about, you know, bringing in Ahsoka now, Boba Fett now, all that kind of thing. Rick Famuyiwa, I want to make sure to mention, you know, it was great to get that great picture of him as the super calm, super cool, super collected, but knows exactly what he wants. And, you know, the little bit he said about how he's one of the only people along with Filoni and his co-writer last season who has been a writer for Mandalorian. And I liked what he said about, I want to explore the gray areas and how we use power and all that. But all that said, I kind of like leaving a little mystery from the writers and directors about the real kind of deep choices and the real deep meaning. I've been feeling this more and more lately, that we have a culture right now that's like the movie comes out and then 2 seconds later do an hour round table and have the creators tell you exactly what it meant.
Yeah.
And sometimes I enjoy that. Sometimes I think that's valid. Sometimes I think that's great. But I think The Mandalorian in particular is such tip of the iceberg storytelling, where sometimes a thing is ambiguous or a thing can be interpreted a couple of different ways. Or I think it's art that invites you to wonder. And I'm kind of happy to have not all of that room to wonder, that room to dream, that room to wrestle with the ambiguous, to be bulldozed by these incredibly charming, thoughtful directors just saying, yeah, here's what it meant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting enough, I was also watching the documentary series on Netflix called Song Exploder. And they were, you know, sitting down with Trent Reznor. This is Trent Reznor, Star Wars. And they were asking him about the lyrics of Hurt. That was the song they were covering. And he was like, I'm not going to tell you. Not going to tell you. You're trying to get me to tell you. I'm not going to tell you. I know what it means. That's what it means to me. What does it mean to you, type of conversation? And I do think that's important nowadays in an era. Cause again, I'm one who's like, can we get a documentary about every second of the decades I grew up in? Cause I'd love to know. But when it comes to some of this stuff, maybe we could learn to back off a little bit and engage with it in our own ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I appreciated it. This just felt like just right. Amount of insights into kind of what they wanted to explore, how they were exploring it. Oh, that was one other thing I did want to mention. I liked Filoni saying always keep learning. That's what a Jedi would do. I like that Jedi philosophy. And I feel like maybe that's what I'm feeling, is this gave us some great insights, but didn't just, you know, say everything. Still left room for lots of thoughts and discussions among fans.
I think that's a great point you made. I really do. I really think that's great. And I'm glad you brought that up, especially in the era we are in now, where again, it helps us all, even me, helps remind me that what I take from these movies or what I think they're about is still begins with me. And that's my version. And there's many versions out there. And that's a good reminder, including the director versions. And,
yeah.
I'm excited. Final thing. All right. You ready? Couple months, maybe suddenly on Disney Plus, when you're watching their the stories about dogs, which is still my favorite programming on Disney Plus. Are you suddenly going to want to see Luke Skywalker and Mandalorian, the documentaries, the gallery look at that?
I'm so curious. Yeah. I mean, I think I want to hear about it when they want to tell me about it. I mean, there's a part of me that's like, you know, it seems clear from tweets back and forth between Mark Hamill and Ming-Na Wen that Mark Hamill was indeed physically there on the set from their tweets. It sounds like is the way I interpret them. So yeah, of course, there's a part of me that wants to see Mark Hamill standing there and see the exact technical choices they made. But I think it also goes under like, yeah, I'm fine leaving that be a little mysterious for myself right now. I also think there might be just something about they're not ready for whatever reason to discuss the technological choices they made, that, you know, if they're still developing them, if they're, you know, using them in the future, you know, if they're not trademarked yet or patented yet or whatever, who knows why they didn't choose to show us that. but I'm okay not seeing it right now.
Yeah, I want to one day give me that documentary series, 8-part look at Luke Skywalker, Disney Gallery. But yeah, who knows why? Maybe there are also some secrecy issues. I just can't imagine. If you get Mark Hamill back on set, that you wouldn't be rolling some B-roll and some behind-the-scenes stuff. So we'll see. We'll see. But for now, this is what we got. And that was our quick look at it there from that look at the Disney Gallery Mandalorian Season 2. We'll go to the news. Not a lot. A little bit of a quiet week. We are not surprised by that. It's the holidays. But this morning, when we recorded, we released the episode a day later, we had the High Republic live stream on StarWars.com and Star Wars YouTube channel, hosted by Kristen Baver. We had a collection of authors, Kevin Scott, Claudia Gray, Justina Ireland, Charles Soule, Daniel Jose Older, and Michael Siglein of the publishing wing there. And an intro from Kathleen Kennedy and talking about the publishing initiative. And we went into about an hour discussion on the High Republic. Joseph and I will be looking at Light of the Jedi very soon. We've got that book in our hands and we're reading it and enjoying it as well. We'll talk about that in a second. But overall thoughts, did you get a chance to sit down with this one here, Joseph?
I did not actually watch the live stream. I apologize. There were some time management issues.
There's a lot going on in life, and I had to choose between this, which is Force Center work, and having a nice hearty breakfast, and I chose this. Yes, I'm a hero. I'm a hero, everybody. I didn't have my egg. So here's some stuff we'll just highlight here kind of quickly here. A lot of it was really rolling this out to people who are not familiar with it, because I thought a lot of it was not repeated information, one-for-one repeats, but just, you know, if you've been following along, if you're doing a Star Wars podcast or you go to StarWars.com every day, we are familiar with a lot of the stuff they talked about today, characters and designs and everything there, and the overall discussion. But there's some great stuff to pull out of it here. I did want to talk about Charles Soule, talked about at the beginning. They did this writer's retreat up the Skywalker Ranch, some story group people there, some Disney and Lucasfilm execs. But the authors were there just round tabling what they think this could be. And Charles Soule went to the idea of what was impressive about Star Wars. And Claudia Gray said, yeah, cool, got that. I've been writing Star Wars for a bit. I want to look at what I love about other epic sagas. Those are two big starting points for this era of storytelling. Joseph, what'd you take from that?
Yeah, I think both of those perspectives are really, really great and really, really important. That's a thing that they have been talking a lot about on Mandalorian, about how Favreau wants to be inspired by the things that inspired Lucas. So I think it's two really great ways to look at it. Without any spoilers, you know, reading Charles Soule's Light of the Jedi, I can feel that in my very bones. That yep. Question of what was impressive about Star Wars. Not going to say any spoilers, but in particular, that novel is taking ideas about government and ideas about Jedi that are in Star Wars and saying, let's see more of that iceberg. Let's that one thing that was kind of in the corner and was cool, let's go all the way with that. So I'm really enjoying that. And I think Claudia Gray has also got such a great perspective. I was talking on the podcast a little while back. There's a Netflix show, very short show called Myths and Monsters. It's one season, 6 episodes, but a pretty great overview on just some big picture myths, why we tell them, how we approach them, how they're different in different cultures, how they change over time. And I remember watching that and just getting so excited because, like, yeah, that's one of the parts of Star Wars, and we should always reexamine that because that is so foundational to the part of Star Wars that is, why do we tell these stories? Why do they matter? And it's really cool to hear that Claudia Gray is kind of going on that journey.
Yeah, because you're building this all up from the ground level, even though it's Star Wars. And so Charles Soule's use of the word impressive was I really highlighted that of that could be a lot of things. And you're talking about two big, you know, discussion points, government and the Jedi. And clearly we're getting that. We're going to touch upon that in a second. But also, I again, no spoilers, a little tease. But the first third of this book is this kind of big event, this great disaster. And it is so cinematic. And scope and tension and what's at stake and just everything there that's always been what I've kind of looked at as Star Wars and what's impressive about Star Wars. Is it just you're not just pulled in the world, but you're pulled into the fight. You're pulled into the causes. You're pulled into what you might lose. And I thought he just, I heard that. And I was like, that kind of, I was impressed with the first third of his book and his book overall. But I was like, that just kind of connects to me. And then as it flows into the other things that you mentioned there that we're going to talk about. And Claudia Gray, yeah, that just makes sense too of Star Wars is so based on and other things in the sense of what influences the storytelling that makes some sense there. I forget who said it. I'm sorry, but I was sipping coffee. I just wrote down the quote, not who said it. I think it was Charles Soule or maybe Kevin Scott. But this era finds the Jedi not hidden away. The Jedi are out with the people, and that makes them part of the people. And they kind of referenced a little bit of Phantom Menace era, prequel era of the Jedi, not locked away in their towers. Clearly, they're out and about, but just a little bit of a change. And this is 200 years earlier. That makes some sense. And this is an era of still of exploration, of growth, and expansion, and building blocks for what's to come. So I was very curious what your reaction to that description of the Jedi during this time period.
Yeah, I love that because I think in retrospect, a lot of Charles Soule and Kevin Scott and Claudia Gray's work in particular, because they were already writing about Jedi and Force stuff, are going to be looked back as like, these are the prequels to the concepts of parts of the High Republic. You know, I know they're not the only people creating it, but they were already writing Jedi stuff. And in particular, Claudia Gray has that passage in Master and Apprentice where Qui-Gon is kind of openly wondering about this of maybe Jedi should not be raised in a beautiful temple in a, you know, in the heart of the core on this, you know, urban city planet. Maybe they should be out and about with the people of the galaxy or even outside of the fancier parts of Coruscant so they can, you know, understand what kind of day-to-day people are going through. And I think that's a really neat and interesting idea. And so far, again, without spoilers, what's been great about Light of the Jedi is it is not hand-wavy. It is not an opening crawl about the government is good and so are the Jedi and now they have some adventures. There is an effort to show specifically what choices make a difference. And this is one of them.
Yeah, you're so right. That might have been subconsciously one of the things I guess I'll say worried about going in the High Republic of, all right, you know, the Jedi are running around doing good things. The government's great. And we got some pirates over there causing problems. It's already so much more, especially when you talk about the leadership decisions and decisions of the government, both good and bad. There's a lot at play there. But this particular, this is off my notes here, but I think there's definitely a Jedi coming in the High Republic. We haven't met him yet. That is a little privileged in a sense, from Coruscant, raised on Coruscant, trained on Coruscant, a Jedi on Coruscant, and to have to go out in the galaxy and see what's actually out there will be something that seems to be that will affect them. And that's in the back of my mind of one of the descriptions when we met some of the characters. And I think Claudia Gray's writing that character, right? Do you remember that?
I think so. Yeah, I believe so.
So that all tracks. That's all there. Yep. And that and look, it's not a combination of one way or the other. It's just an examination of it and what could be better and how can you make it all work the right way. And already, here's our phrase for the day, try not to spoil. Already, you see just the different perspectives from the Jedi and their backgrounds and what they know and how they feel and interact with the Force, how that fuels some of their decisions, good and bad, and heroic decisions too. And I really... I don't know. That's going to be fascinating. The philosophy of the Jedi is going to be at play a lot in the series. And that was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
Yeah. You've been mentioning the government stuff. We got Chancellor Lena So, who's got her, I already forget the names. I haven't done my full Light of the Jedi notes, but she's got these two cool guard cats. They're giant, have like four sets of eyes. And she's a really interesting character already, but they talked about this, in the press conference or the event today, just this idea at the center of the Republic is a beautiful idea is at the center of the Republic. Let me say it right. And that is this era of the galaxy is definitely expanding, but it's also, I think, trying to build up. And you got the great works and this concept. It's this almost political campaign speech. You can tell she probably won elections on, but it's real to her. This we are all the Republic. And that pops up a lot. And you mentioned the government stuff and the choices, Joseph, and what even the Starlight Beacon itself, this space station, means good and bad to people. You got to be excited about that and glad that they're addressing it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just from Charles Sewell's book, you know, we'll get into all the details when we do our review. It is really clear that the whole story group for this, the whole High Republic creators, sat down and discussed, okay, well, what does, if this is a golden time, what does that really mean? You know, what kind of leader would be there? What kind of mistakes that we've seen in the prequels would they be trying to avoid? How would they be trying to avoid them? You know, what would their anxieties be? What would be the risks of what they're trying to do? So it all comes across as really genuine and realistic so far. And I think it all relates back to this idea of this chancellor who is really trying to sell the galaxy on a really Jedi Force perspective of we are all connected and let's help each other.
Yeah, and a lot was mentioned, and I know we discussed it before, but Camelot, the idea of Camelot, both Arthurian legend, but also what was kind of referred to as JFK and his cabinet and his presidency in the early 60s. And Charles Soule did touch upon it in the conference of like, that was a great time, not for everybody. And they're going to examine that as well. But it's going to lead to some, I think, some interesting storytelling as well, because Star Wars and politics go together. I've always been excited by those conversations. Some other news and notes here. There was a lot of great stuff. Again, this one for an hour. Every author got a chance to talk about favorite characters. Daniel Jose Older's got a character coming called Buckets of Blood. That is based on, Daniel Jose Older was a paramedic for a long time, and there used to be someone he worked with who would get on the radio and take a call for service and be like, you tell him Buckets of Blood is coming. And that was his name. Like, he referred to him. So he's got that character coming in one of the comics. We know a lot about one of the villains, and actually we got a correct pronunciation. Markion Roe is the Eye of the Nile, already an interesting character from what we've read. They talked about him. This was interesting, Joseph, the Drengar, the Drengar. This is the plant, the sentient plant life enemy that is coming in this era as well. A little dark side influence going on there. What do you think about that? We haven't talked about light and dark too much in this era, but it's there.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. They had that trailer as well, right? And in that trailer ended with they're going to fight all these foes and there'll be a battle for control of the Force itself. And that, I think, was really interesting to me, that it made it sound like, oh, yeah, there's going to be something that is on this actual sort of a cosmic level of the actual identity of the Force. So I'm very excited. We talked a lot about the Drengar. I'm so excited to see how they play out. They're that perfect mix of the pulp, the adventure serial of, yeah, they're plant monsters. They're swamp things.
Yeah, they're 1950s alien monsters. Yeah.
Right. They're Day of the Triffid. They're, you know, that's great. That's absolutely great. But they have such deep potential for meaning in Star Wars, the constant Star Wars push and pull between what is it to be flowing and organic versus what is it to be, you know, mechanical and perfect. And that relationship is going to be really interesting.
Already a little more excited for them than I was before. Not that I didn't enjoy the idea of killer plants roaming around the galaxy there, you know, but dark side influence doesn't mean the plants are Sith, but just like the galaxy, the Force, what it is, and getting into those areas, I'm already intrigued. So that was one of my favorite little parts. Kind of housekeeping news and notes here. Michael Sigelin was asked about the reading order. He did say, hey, release order, it's probably the best way if you want, but really this is designed, even though things are so connected, this is a very connected era of storytelling. It's definitely designed to, you could just pick up a comic if that's all you want to read. You can read just the YA novels if that's what you want to read, or the Del Rey novels. You'll be able to experience the era a lot by just focusing on just certain parts of it if you want, or you can read it all. And there'll be a lot, Joseph, the Star Wars Insider. Remember that magazine? It's still going. I used to run to Barnes & Noble in the 90s and get it. Oh, what a different era. They will have serialized fiction from this era in issues of Star Wars Insider, called Stories of Starlight, and some other ones that will be prequel-ish or moments after the book finish, those kind of stories. So I ask you, these two final, these points I just brought up, Joseph, the release order and then serialized fiction in Star Wars Insider. That's a lot. Are you okay with all this?
Yeah, no, I'm trying to, I have this, just this desire to try to keep up with it all, and I don't know if I'll be able to, but it is just this kind of fun moment to like, let's all start fresh, you know, and I want to try to keep up, but I am also a little bit concerned that I won't be, and obviously, honestly, the Star Wars Insider was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Another, they're eventually going to bundle these into some, you know, book I can buy, right? All these stories. But so we'll see. We'll see. It's a lot. And I understand why it's a lot, because it's exciting. And I think it is also, it's really great to hear that there's an effort to make it accessible. I think accessibility is a huge part of this. The, again, no spoilers. I think Light of the Jedi is totally accessible if you've never Star Wars before. And I think that's great to say, like, if you just want to read a story in the back of a magazine, if you just want to read the YA books, I think that's great.
Yeah, I think they had to be aware of that. And it seems like they're delivering on that. And yeah, I've been really enjoying Light of the Jedi, but my comic book guy, the guy who runs the shop I go to, and I haven't stepped foot in the shop since January, I think. But he's been mailing my comics. And, I'm like, do I go digital? What do I do? I'm still trying to support this shop. And he's like, hey, I got a stack here. I can mail it out to you. I'll invoice you. We got that new High Republic series coming. And I had a moment where I went, oh, that's right. Oh boy. But then today, coming out of this event, I got excited. Like you said, Joseph, we are here. New. Time to start fresh. And you can just kind of work your way through it. And I like that.
Yeah.
Final one, little housekeeping thing. We got three phases of this publishing initiative that's going for a few years. We knew that. They're calling the three phases, Light of the Jedi, which we're in right now, Quest of the Jedi, and Trials of the Jedi. That sounds wonderfully ominous. Any thoughts on those phases? Everyone loves phases, Joseph.
I do love phases. I'm more excited than I thought for phases. That sounds like just a great classic three-act structure. Sometimes I get up in the morning and optimism, light, and then I'm trying to get something done, quest, and then by the end of the day, I have encountered trials. So I think it's very relatable, very good. And honestly, just hearing the phases, I think there's a part of me, this is so weird to say after I just said all the nice things about this fresh, brand new journey, there's a part of me that feels like I'd really be okay if this was a kind of set story, you know? Mm-hmm. That it wasn't just, we're setting a new era and now we're just going to tell endless stories. But it was a little bit more like other Star Wars has been, where this main story in this era is going to be told with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then there'll always be room to jump back in and tell stories set in that era or tell stories about characters in that era. But the story itself, much like we can still tell stories set in and around the original trilogy, but that story is It begins, it escalates, and it ends. I would be kind of happy if the High Republic was like a 5-year mission, honestly, you know?
I'm there with you on it. I'd love a finish line. Doesn't mean you can't revisit it down the line. Just like, you know, give me another Skywalker saga essay somewhere. I don't care. But yeah, I'm with you too. A finish, some sort of finish line, a light at the end of the tunnel would work for me. But we'll see. Right now, a lot of High Republic era coming. The books are out. The comics coming out this week. I know getting things shipped can be a little bit of a challenge right now, understandably. So have patience. The stories will emerge. And Joseph and I will dive into Light of the Jedi right quick here on Force Center. Final quick news moment here. Patty Jenkins gave very small Rogue Squadron updates, as did Chris Pine. Talking about, Wonder Woman 84 is out. She's doing a lot of press for it, as was Chris Pine. So she said the treatment for Rogue Squadron is already done. She's working a lot, obviously more Wonder Woman, Cleopatra, a lot of things going on. She, thankfully, is a director that is hot, regardless of any opinions of Wonder Woman 84. We're not having that discussion here. In fact, I haven't had a chance to see it yet. All right. She is doing some great stuff. So she got the treatment done. She mentioned that there's a high profile male screenwriter. That might not be a direct quote, but what a lot of the news articles are describing. A high profile male screenwriter is writing the script, but Patty doesn't want to reveal who it is. She wants his own announcement to have its day in the sun. And that's still forthcoming there. And the final one here, Chris Pine has heard the story. Chris Pine has heard the story and he likes it. So any thoughts on all that stuff? The Rogue Squadron kind of updates.
The kind of updates. You know, I totally understand that it is part of the press and coverage game. If you've got somebody like Chris Pine, you're interviewing him for Wonder Woman 84, like, yeah, you know anything about Rogue Squadron? You're going to be in it? Do you like it? And of course, he's just like, no, I heard the story. I didn't read the treatment. I heard the story. It was great. That all makes sense to me. But I love the way it can get phrased in articles. Like Chris Pine was like, press, please come to my home at noon on Tuesday. I'm going to stand on my front steps and I shall give an announcement. Like, you know, it's a casual opinion offered during another interview and I'm happy for it. But, you know, Chris Pine didn't finally reveal anything, you know?
Yeah. I had a weird moment. A few Comic-Cons ago, we were at a press breakfast for The Walking Dead, and me and some of the Schmoes gang were sitting at a table with the, gosh, I forget his name, David, who plays the governor with the eye patch, the governor.
Yeah. I'm spacing his name as well, but yes.
Yeah.
Charming. He's also been on Doctor Who.
Yes, indeed. And charming guy, a UK-based guy. And this was prior to Force Awakens, and, you know, there's some UK connections to Star Wars productions all the time. And I just, some of the people I was at the table with, Schmoes people were whispering to me, like, we got to see if we can get some Star Wars news out of him. I'm like, the guy's having an omelet, man. what am I going to ask him? And we tried. We didn't get anything out of him. He was savvy. We didn't get anything out of it. So it is the game. It is the game indeed. Big question of when the Rogue Squadron movie takes place. Still unknown. Joseph, how are we going to survive not knowing the era?
I think we would just have to enjoy the mystery. I think so far, with the evidence that we have of, you know, a new generation in a future era, that all sounds like post-sequel trilogy. And I think for me, I am going to spend my daydreaming about Rogue Squadron time thinking about what that means for the story. You know, how much galaxy building are they going to do about what the state of the government is? You know, is the movie going to, get into the sort of the philosophy of, if there is a Rogue Squadron in a post-sequel era, that means some philosophical things of, is there a new threat? Are they in defense? Is this a small scale stake thing? Is the galaxy still in a little bit of turmoil because the government was entirely shattered? Even if this is 10 years after Rise of Skywalker, I'm going to spend my time thinking about some of those things. And I still think the most exciting thing to me about the idea that it is set after the sequels is this idea that there'd be a storied history and a reverence for what Rogue Squadron means. And this is a new generation trying to earn their wings and earn the mantle, you know, of Derek Hobby Clivian.
Just because I want a character to look at the other character and be like, you know what you are? You're dangerous. You're dangerous like Zev Zaneska was. Okay?
Again. Yeah, poking a little bit fun, but I do mean that of the weight, especially that people who played those video games a lot like I did, or particularly who grew up with the books, the idea that what that group of people did was meaningful. How can a new generation live up to it? That's powerful, interesting stuff.
Yeah, and again, glad I'm not writing a Star Wars movie. I'm not the screenwriter. I did this. You and I try to do a little bit of digging, look at some IMDb pages. We definitely do not know this information, who this writer is. We're still open. There's no pattern. Sometimes you look for the patterns in the directors' careers or who they worked with a lot. Nothing that we see emerging. So it's going to be a fun announcement when it comes.
Yeah, exactly. And I think my only thought on the writer right now is, you know, I'm really hoping for somebody with a great track record, a great perspective, all those things, a great working relationship with Patty Jenkins. But I know not all Star Wars fans feel this way, but I actually do have a lot of faith in the team at Lucasfilm, everything from Kathleen Kennedy to the story group to Dave Filoni, that they do really, really keep an eye on the big ideas of Star Wars in the core philosophy and try new things while protecting the old and protecting what really, really matters about the heart of Star Wars. And I have faith that will happen with this new movie.
I do as well. Let's look at our Star Wars news. We've got your questions coming up. Before we do that, we have a Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And Joseph, well, yep, this is the one this week that is definitely the one you want to get right now.
Yeah, this one seems pretty obvious. Easiest pick ever. It is Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule. Ignite your blade so you can fully be lit while you listen to this great, great book.
Absolutely. Do that by downloading your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. Your questions are on the way here on 4center.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Force Center. Now it's time for your questions. We go to the far reaches of social media and our Patreon page to hear from all of you. Joseph, what do we have today?
Yeah, that's right. Far reaches of Twitter is a pinned tweet at the top of our Force Center Twitter page. So if you want to ask us a question, we now have a pinned tweet, and you can just go ahead and ask a question there. That's the best way to find them, because when they come in from all over social media, they can be difficult to find. So that's the best chance. Right now, we got two great questions from Twitter and then two great questions from patrons on Patreon. We'll go first to Twitter. Tim Harrison asks, with Hayden returning to the Kenobi series, do you think he can show up in other projects? Ahsoka? Maybe he can redo his Return of the Jedi cameo, since I heard that was just random footage of him. I cannot personally speak to that. I did not have time to do the deep dive of research. I don't know if that is random footage of Hayden myself. But Ken, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that Hayden will return in other places in Star Wars?
I definitely... opens up the possibilities. I never would have thought that, you know, but the Ahsoka series, I don't think you necessarily need him in that story in the present sense, obviously, a Force ghost or something like that, I guess you could say, but, you know, any kind of flashbacks. I am intrigued. I got to be careful. I'm getting myself geeked up for something that's probably not going to happen even in the Kenobi series of like, could you imagine a weird flashback where also you have Natalie Portman doing Padme and it's some alternate reality of what could have been like, bah, 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 I start getting so excited. So I guess I'm with you, Tim, like, hey, maybe this could work as far as the Return of the Jedi stuff. Yeah. It wasn't, I think they grabbed his face from something else. I don't know but that's the thing. If George was in charge still, and I know a lot of people still want that, George doesn't, but you know, I could see him going, hey, Hayden's come back. Let me go reshoot part of Jedi. Jokes aside, I could see that, but no, I don't think they'll do that.
Yeah, I don't think I think that, you know, Lucas delivered his final versions of the films, which is why we all had the delightful surprise of one last gift from George Lucas in the form of a random McClunky from Greedo. I don't think that they're going to mess with the original trilogy or change anything in the original trilogy at this point, although that is a really fun discussion to be had. So many different feelings about Hayden's appearance at the end of Return of the Jedi. But I loved him bringing up the possibility of Ahsoka. I'm very intrigued by that. And again, it's totally what the story needs. I have my own kind of personal opinion interpretation based on the storytelling that exists now, that Force spirits do not show up like, you know, how to YouTube videos. You know, they don't just pop up because they appear when they are deeply, deeply needed by someone that they have a connection to. Or I think, you know, with a relationship like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, where Qui-Gon is sort of they're communing because Qui-Gon is teaching him how to become one with the Force in this different way. Like, then maybe, yeah, Kenobi can kind of summon Qui-Gon, like we see in that great, from a certain point of view, A New Hope story. But all of that is to say, like, I don't know what Ahsoka's journey is going to be in the Ahsoka show. I read that she is not entirely at peace when we see her in The Mandalorian. So if this quest that she's going on, which we're assuming is to find Ezra, deal with Thrawn, maybe, if she gets to a point where she truly, truly needs help, that would be an amazing scene to see Anakin appear to her at an extremely low moment, given that Ahsoka has always been a character of great strength, who has definitely had low moments, but has been able to rebound and find her strength. That what a great way for Anakin to appear, because it wouldn't really be about Anakin. It's rarely about the Force spirits when they appear. It's about the other character. And sometimes the other character tries to get something out of the Force spirit that is, you know, they need to reconcile with. But it's fascinating for me to think about what would it mean for the story, for the character of Ahsoka, if Anakin showed up.
Yeah, there's you and I have talked about this campfire conversation we'd love to imagine with Luke and Ahsoka, and Luke kind of saying, hey, at the end of, you know, Anakin's life, my father's life, this is what he became, Anakin again, that kind of stuff. And you're so right. I'm with you on highlighting what I feel an underlying pain going on in Ahsoka in Mandalorian season 2. So, you know, something like that transfers to Force Ghost Anakin sitting on a log saying, here's what's going on. If that serves Ahsoka, I think that's key to your point, and I second that.
Yeah, and that would be fascinating. I think the sheer volume of tweets that there would be comparing moments in the Clone Wars animated series to that live action thing would be great. Great thoughts, Tim. Ken, you've been saying this for years, and it's always been true. But right now, with all these new shows and all these new actors, new and old actors and characters, it is a really exciting time because all these possibilities are wide open now, you know?
All the dreams you had in the 80s as a kid, guess what? They're all true now. So, or 90s or 2000s, whatever era, they're all true.
They really are. And speaking of dreams, let's take a question from Broom Kid. Broom Kid is keeping us on the Ahsoka train and asks, what happened to the character Morgan Elsbeth? Did Ahsoka kill her? Did Ahsoka get the info she wanted and let Morgan make like a tree and leave?
Make like a tree and get out of here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm sure most of our listeners are all caught up. This is, of course, a Mandalorian question. Chapter 13, The Jedi. We do last see Ahsoka, we last see Morgan Elsbeth with Ahsoka defeating her, putting that glowing white blade to her throat and saying, where is Grand Admiral Thrawn? Where do you go with this, Ken? I think that's very much a choice to leave us in ambiguity and cut the scene there. But what do you think happened next?
This is a great question, Broom Kid, and it goes probably into some deeper areas of Jedi philosophy and Ahsoka, where she is in her life, all those kind of things. It does not read to me that she killed her. I just can't imagine Ahsoka doing that. Letting her go with an assurance that you're not doing what you've been doing, which is, you know, kind of continuing to build, a war machine for the Empire. I can't imagine Ahsoka trusting her to do that too. We don't know Morgan Elsbeth too much beyond this episode, obviously. So if I have to make a choice, I think she gets the information and I think she might take her with her. But even though, look, I know we don't see her, but we don't know what ship Ahsoka has somewhere. We don't know. Morgan Elsbeth could be tied up waiting for a ride. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that there is ambiguity. I've been banging on about ambiguity lately, and I think this is a good kind of ambiguity because in a way, the fact that we don't know is, you know, setting up great suspense and tension for what is at stake in the Ahsoka series. Where is Ahsoka at? But if I had to just have guesses and headcanon right now, I think Ahsoka was really clear in that episode of she's getting that information. The way she says, you know, I'm not going to give you a choice not to give me the information. You're going to give me the information. It's very, very clear of I have power and I am going to use it because I need that information from you to help other people. So you're going to give it to me. So I think somehow Ahsoka got that information. I think from there, Ahsoka would probably not allow Morgan to continue. I don't think she'd let her go, put it that way, because not only is Morgan, you know, doing kind of big picture, I'm working with Imperials, I'm rebuilding arms. She's viciously torturing that town, like literally, right? Like using pain as a symbol of power, stringing people up. I don't think there's any way Ahsoka lets that continue. So I think Ahsoka, to your point, Ken, I think there's a very good chance she's like, great, here are the flex cuffs and get in my ship. You know, I'll drop you off at the, you know, New Republic prison ship. Or I'll keep you with me, you know, because you're going to show me where Thrawn is or whatever. I think that's a great idea. There's a part of me that feels like, you know, Ahsoka tries to give her, tries to say, all right, I'm going to let you live. And Morgan Elsbeth tries to kill her. And I think that Ahsoka would absolutely take her down in self-defense.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
I don't think the end of that scene is Ahsoka saying, where's Grand Admiral Thrawn? And Morgan Elsbeth's like, okay, he's on this planet. And Ahsoka's like, thanks. I think Ahsoka is at a place in her Jedi philosophy where I don't want to cut you down, but if you make a bad choice, I will, because I have power and I am making a choice to use it. And that is a part of being a Jedi. She seems to have fully embraced that. But I don't think she would just cut her down unless she had her hand forced.
Yeah, she's always going to go to the light. No gray. She's not going to step to the dark side and chop her head off just because. So, but this is why it's a great question, because I don't quite know.
Yeah. Great thoughts, Broom Kid. We're going to move on to some questions from patrons on Patreon. As always, we encourage patrons to let us know a little bit where the question is coming from. So we got a good question here from Alden with some thoughts about where this question is coming from. Here we go. Alden Diaz says, "Hey guys, as I write this, the Rise of Skywalker's anniversary is just days away. For you, it might have happened already because that is how time works." That is exactly correct. It has already happened. With that, Alden says, "I've been thinking a lot about the redemption of Ben Solo. We, of course, can see and hear in the film how the spirits of Han and Leia reach his heart and help give him the strength for that final momentous choice. But I wonder what silent role Luke might have played. And I don't mean mystically. I don't subscribe to the theory that Luke had anything to do with summoning Han or projecting his image. But I do wonder if Ben thought about his uncle as he tossed the saber away and ran to find that TIE scout. He's built that hilt as Luke's Padawan. In a year prior, he swung it right at Luke's projection, fully intending to kill him. So my question is, did he forgive his uncle during those off-screen moments? Did he reconsider the night at Luke's temple? Perhaps he finally saw it more along the lines of the third Rashomon-style flashback that we, the viewers, saw. You know, the more reasonable one, where Mark Hamill didn't need to look like a crazed serial killer. And ultimately, did Ben Solo die feeling like Luke's apprentice? What do you think? Thanks, guys. Thank you, Alden. Thank you for the great thoughts, as always. Ken, where do you go with this? What do you think Ben Solo is feeling about his uncle, Luke Skywalker, after he has returned to the light?
Well, here's where I go with it further. I think Ben absolutely would make sense that he'd replay a lot of that, because I think he's probably been replaying a lot of that every day of his life, much like the stuff with his father. I think I see it as Ben having to forgive himself in a way, which does not mean he has to be like, it's all right that I had a part in slaughtering those students or this and that. But the a little bit of he's so separated from his father and mother. We've talked about, you've documented very well, Joseph, just felt he couldn't go back to Leia after what he's done. And there's, you know, I think there's a lot of truth to what Luke might feel about that situation, in the sense of it was my failure, not necessarily all Ben's. So not to say it's all right of the things he did Ben, but I go to Ben not necessarily needing to come at peace with Luke, but just going, it's all right that I went through that. It's all right that I did that. I've got to move past that. How do I move past that? And in doing so, perhaps honoring some of the training that Luke was, or honoring Luke's relation to him and what he may have done for him all through his life. Do I see it as I'm going to throw the blade away like my uncle did everything? No, I just, Ben's got to feel pretty mixed up about his actions in that too as well. But also knowing that, hey, not everyone's going to look at the hero and think he did right and I did wrong. And just, there's a lot of self-realization and self-forgiveness I think he has to come to terms with.
Yeah, I think that's really great insights and giving me some thoughts about how it might feel to be Ben Solo in those moments where he has let go of the anger, and you know, different ideas must be flowing through him, different connection to the Force. You know, how much does he just feel in the Force a connection to Luke? You know, even as Luke exists within the cosmic force of, not that Luke's like whispering to him of like, good job, buddy, go here. Like, again, not, I don't think the Force spirits are YouTube videos, but just feeling Luke's presence and connecting to a time in his life where he was learning the ways of the light side of the Force and learning them from his uncle and connecting to some of those feelings that he literally felt then. There's so much that's changed about his demeanor, you know, when he's Ben Solo. It's one of the great things about Rise of Skywalker, and I can see in some of that, like, just a weight. There's like a weight off his shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, in his relationship to Luke, the things that I go to are, I think that Kylo, when he returns back to light and becomes Ben, I think he forgives Luke. This is my headcanon, but the reasons that I say that are, you know, when you're looking at some of Luke's scenes in The Last Jedi with Rey, you know, he
Luke says, I'm paraphrasing, that he thought he would be a match for the darkness that he knew was in his nephew, that Leia was concerned about. And I think that's where that hubris, our favorite word, comes in, that Luke was like, no, I can do this. I know that he's going to feel that pull to the darkness. He seems to be wrestling with it. Leia seemed to sense it early on in his young life. I can help him with that. And Luke truly did fail to protect him from Sidious. You know, that's a hard thing to say about your hero, but you know, to me, Luke is still a hero, even if he made some mistakes. And I think that's truly what he's mad at himself about, is it gets crystallized in that moment where he ignites the blade over Ben, in the Rashomon style visions, or flashbacks. But I think that's truly what it was, is I thought I could steer you away from the dark side, and I didn't figure out how to do it. And Sidious got to you. And I think Luke is sincere on Crait when he's saying, you blame me. So, and you're partially right. So you're not going to listen to me about coming back to the light side. I'm not here to save your soul, but I do apologize. You know, I did fail you, you know? So Luke has actively apologized. Mm-hmm. So I imagine when Ben returns to the light, there is a sense of forgiveness, mm-hmm. for, like, I know you did your best, uncle. You tried to help me. And, you know, if I'm going to forgive myself for my mistakes, I need to forgive you too. And then to Alden's point about the visions in Last Jedi, this is also just pure opinion. I think that last telling from Luke's, to me, that's the truth. The first time we see what Luke is kind of telling himself, mm-hmm. because that's what he feels he needs to hear. The second time, Kylo's version, or it's the first is Kylo's. Anyway.
Yeah, Kylo's and Luke's, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it doesn't matter. Kylo's vision, I think he actively wants to tell Rey, mm-hmm. because that's the vision of the truth that Kylo needs to believe in to hold on to his anger, right? We know he feels the pull to the light. It can't be something where they both made mistakes, where there's a failure of communication, a failure of understanding. For Kylo to hold on to his anger and believe everything he has done is correct, it has to be Luke's fault. And I think that basically when he lets go of the anger, he's letting go of that point of view that he described to Rey. Mm-hmm. And he's probably allowing himself to see Luke's final description of the way it truly happened, is, you know, a moment of folly from Luke, just a moment, but not an actual attack.
Yeah, a lot of what you said taps into this is in a boiled down general sense of just, you know, I don't know. Sometimes if you need a, there comes a point in your life where you see your parents as humans who either did their best or did horrible things and made mistakes. But at some point, for you to move forward, you got to let that go for them. And like you said, forgiveness for Luke, and which turns into just kind of acceptance and your path, as bad as it can be, led you to where you are right now. And there's some accepting of that as well. All of it tied in. And why it's such a great question. Trying to dive into a moment we don't see on screen.
Yeah. But and that's the fun of, like, we can certainly have different opinions and different takes. But there are these trails in the individual lines and in the individual moments that we can follow if we want and flesh out if we want. And I also think, you know, I'm trying to really remind myself to respond to the emotions of, you know, a question like this. I could write an essay. I'd be happy to write an essay. Yeah. Many of our listeners would happily write essays, have written essays, will write essays. But a part of that should always just be like, what does it feel like, mm-hmm. when you see the way Ben Solo moves, when you see the way he uses the Force? Does it feel like he is in a place of forgiveness toward Luke? And to me, that's a big yes. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I would agree. And father and mother, a lot of forgiveness in the redemption of Ben Solo.
That is right. So we're going to move on to our final question from Joshua Thorne. Joshua says, hashtag speculate responsibly. Speculate responsibly time. Is Grogu being set up to eventually have his own movie?
It's going to have to be set far into the future so he can actually talk and basically be a younger prequel Yoda 2.0. And this could be Disney's way of sort of ignoring the sequel trilogy and its completely unwarranted dislike from some fans. It could be set so far into the future, maybe 100 plus years, they could use the sequels instead as great callbacks and not a direct tie-in to exactly what is going on so far into the timeline. So some great thoughts there from Josh. There's the big picture thought of, is Grogu going to be starring in his own feature film or Disney Plus film? And, you know, a little bit, I think, swimming around in Joshua's question is the what is going forward? What is kind of Grogu's relationship to Yoda, to the sequels, to kind of some of the real world perceptions of Star Wars?
Yeah, you know, the question of what happens to him, and we are not of the mind that we automatically assume Kylo Ren or the Knights of Ren cut him down in the temple. I don't think that at all, but it's great stuff. But exactly what you're saying, the kind of that emotional connection to what came before, and what is Luke going to say to him? What is Luke when he pulls out the history books? I think it's interesting storytelling. It's interesting things I wouldn't mind seeing and hearing. I don't believe anything's being set up, Joshua, even though you know are speculating responsibly. But, you know, down the line when you start, if this keeps rolling on and you and I are doing Force Center year 35, does anyone there go, hey, you know, I want to tell some storytelling. And you know what? That character moved me when I was X amount of years old, and that's the story I want to know. That could be realistic to me as well. This 100 plus years type of thing is like that'd be an interesting connection that would work. But I don't see it being built or set up. But it could be in someone's mind. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. No, I think this is a very always in motion is the future kind of question, and I feel like a lot of the storytelling right now. Yeah, for some things in Mandalorian season two, like Ahsoka and mentioning Grand Admiral Thrawn, definitely some chess pieces are being moved into place for series that are about to happen. But I think there's also just a lot of storytelling of just like, let's invent worlds, let's invent characters, let's invent ideas, and maybe someday down the line, something more will blossom from them. And I feel like that's a little bit more where Grogu is at. Mm-hmm. There's a part of me that feels like if the Mandalorian does have two more seasons in it, that it will come back around to Grogu, even if it is just a Din checking in and seeing who his child is becoming. You know, the promise to see him again feels like something that we'll see on screen. So I kind of think that we will see Grogu again, even if it doesn't ever become the Mando and the Child show again. I think we're going to see Grogu again. And I so agree with you. I think it is a generational thing. You know, we spent a good chunk of time at the top of the podcast talking about Rodriguez is connecting to his childhood love of Boba Fett and who is he really when he's unleashed? And it excites me to think of 20 years from now, somebody whose first Star Wars was The Mandalorian is like, I always wondered what Grogu would be like when he grew up. I'm kind of excited for that person to tell the story.
Absolutely. And Force Center will be there to cover it.
Yes, we won't even need podcasting equipment. It will just be in our brains, Ken.
Yes.
Microphones in our brains. The other thing, just to touch very briefly on here from Joshua's question, is I think, you know, Joshua is, I think, reflecting a reality that there's still a ton of vocal people who really, really dislike the sequel trilogy, or even people who I think are more casual Star Wars fans who, when they express their love for Mandalorian, also want to include, and it's better than the sequel trilogy. So yeah. it's a weird, tense time for the sequel trilogy. I think Joshua is reflecting that very honestly. Mm-hmm. But I also just really feel like, I think 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the amount of controversy and battles and back and forth of the sequels will just so be a thing of the past. You know, time changes. Time cools opinions. And also the people who are five in 2015 who grew up with Rey and Finn and Poe as their Star Wars, you know, they'll be stepping into their own and they'll be a big part of the conversation. And I think things will change.
It's like we've been there before.
Yeah, a little bit. So great questions.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joshua, Alden, Broom Kid, and Tim. Always great questions from our listeners.
Absolutely. As Joseph said, you can find a pinned tweet on our Twitter feed and you can go submit a question there. Or if you're on Patreon, that's where you take a lot of questions as well. And here's where you can find that stuff on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and more. Merch, if you want to get the Speculate Responsibly t-shirt designed by the great Brian Ward, that is at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center as well, or just tell a friend about Force Center. We appreciate that as well. You can follow me at Catnapsock or go to catnapsock.com for information and all the things I'm doing, including very soon the Good People Association, bringing the entertainment to the good people of the world, a production company, digital brand I'm working on with some pals, Josh McCook, Mark Riley, Eric Bass from Shinedown, and more. So stay tuned for more announcements about what is coming there. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for my other podcast, Obsessed, and for old comedy albums and all sorts of stuff. Hopefully I'll be doing some more online shows, and when I do, they will be on my website at josephscrimshaw.com.
Absolutely. So, for the High Republic era and Charhounds, oh, I can't wait till y'all read about the Charhounds. We'll see you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.